en busca de un mejor destino para ti, lo que viniera de ti.
Welcome to the Inside the Journey podcast. This is episode number 28 for Sunday, November 10th, 2013. I'm Nelson DeWitt.
And I'm John Younger.
And we are still the creative team behind the documentary film Identify Melvin Buscando.
Well, there's more of a team now.
Yes, there's more than, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But today's episode, we are going to talk about something that I call impact versus acclaim. And one question that I've gotten a lot during the past couple showings that we've done is, are you going to take this to film festivals? And what people are asking is sort of, what's the distribution, but what do you plan? How do you plan to get it out into the world? And this question of film festivals kind of highlights one of the tough decisions that we face while trying to make a somewhat independent documentary film. So today we're going to try and unpack that a little bit and not necessarily talk specifically about film festivals, but just in the context that that's one vehicle, one path that we could pursue. So, okay. Yeah, that's going to be our discussion, and we'll go a little bit deeper into that today. Sound good, John?
Sounds good. And I can't wait till we're crossing that bridge and it's actually a full-on issue, because we're still in the midst of it, but
yeah,
it's an important question.
Yeah, it's kind of it's one of those good problems to have, and it's something that we're working towards. So, you know, I wanted to spend a day just kind of talking about where we are with that decision. So maybe, John, you can kind of explain, as you've done with me, what that film festival route is all about.
The good thing, there's several good things about them, and I think the one that maybe isn't as understood outside of that circuit is that if you are in a film festival or many, it's a good way to draw attention and eyes to your film. Because if, let's say, you're in the Santa Monica Film Festival and the New England Film Festival and the Atlanta Film Festival, and there's a whole list, well, then you know maybe 50 people see your film there at a smaller regional one, but chances are that there'll be articles and blogs and newspaper print about your film, and basically local press. The same way a politician would travel, or a book tour would travel around, and they'd get press about their film. It's one of the few ways to generate it. So that's, you know, that's one of the things people don't realize. You know, a lot of people think, oh, film festivals, what I hear about in the news is what sold for $1 million at Sundance. And that's for like 0.001% of all films that actually applies to. And granted, you know, 50% of people who go into film festivals think that's what they're going for. But really, a lot of it has to do with almost like touring your film and generating the publicity for it to connect with an audience. So that's one of the benefits. And the, you know, when people are going for the big sales and that type of excitement, those film festivals, and, you know, people hear the names of them, it's like Toronto or Sundance, or those a lot of times are exclusive, where they want to be the first place to show your film, and you can't show it anywhere beforehand, and you have to apply like a year in advance. I mean, not quite a year in advance, but the point is, once your film is done, it's like on a shelf, and all your eggs are in this big basket. It's a great basket to be in, but it's a very committed type of strategy, and the hope would be that you come out of it with the legitimacy to help your film.
So that's the idea of sort of acclaim, that it provides this external credibility to the film and what you've done. That is, it can be very valuable, and I think one thing that we've talked about is that, yes, while you're at those films, potentially an HBO or some other organization could come in and buy the film, and then you are being seen not by, you know, a couple hundred people, but a couple hundred thousand people. You know, like your audience to see the film greatly expands.
If you brokered some kind of deal then ostensibly your film would have been paid for and people would be interested in funding your next project. And then your film could actually go somewhere and do something too. There's
Yeah,
also a lot of films that just sort of, they're not trying to quote unquote win an Oscar. They're trying to carve out a niche where it's a an enterprise that, is self-sustaining. And without going for the big splash, maybe that's something we're interested in because you can apply for a lot of film festivals that aren't exclusive. And so you're just basically sending your film out to, Arizona or Colorado or Greece, and those places are going to give it an audience and are going to hopefully generate a little bit of press. And in the meantime, the film could have already been out for a year, and so it's worthwhile and it helps get the word out. But it's not Sundance or Toronto or something.
Right. And as you also pointed out, that you have to withhold the film because they want, this exclusivity, which prevents you from doing things like sharing it with your Kickstarter backers.
One thing I'm getting used to, and I my brain is trained one way. But like I'm constantly reminding myself, like this is what we want to do, and this is what I'm committed to doing, is and I don't have a full picture yet. And we still could, with any luck, end up selling this to some type of media outlet. But I mean that is a goal. But I think we're pretty committed to having it be a fairly open process along the way, and being open to completely producing it independently the whole way through. So we're taking some steps that, you wouldn't necessarily take otherwise if you were trying to crank out a documentary and sell it right away. And we had a nice development along these lines this week that I was going to mention, which is that Nelson's sister is a MBA student in Costa Rica, Ava Coto. She's an MBA student in Costa Rica, and her class has taken on the film as a project where they're going to help do project management for us. So we have a class of Costa Rican business students that are going to be helping us over this winter and for the next several months to get things in order and get ready for the launch. So that along the lines of what we're trying to do, I think that's a really nice development. And her energy, obviously she's really invested in getting your story out there, and she's been a great help so far, and we're both looking forward to meeting these people and working with them. And it'd be
Yeah.
great to have people on board that speak a lot better Spanish than me.
Yeah, because then they can help with like translations or those kind of things. But I think they're really going to help us, looking forward. How do we, we're on the path to get this first part done, and we've said before that we want to do three different sort of episodes. I hope that they'll help us kind of figure out how do we do that? How do we make this some sort of sustainable enterprise and not just this one-time project? And that will obviously be challenging. Going back to something that you said with sort of talking about the film festivals and this idea of press, that's interesting to me because one of the things that I've learned from my work on Kickstarter is that one of the things that crowdfunding does is it compresses the attention for a particular project or product, the attention that you would receive over 6 months or a year, it compresses that down to a month, which is really interesting, and can have, both good and bad sides, but it drives attention and awareness of your project in a way that, in a much more in a quicker way than going to all these different film festivals and having all the independent.
It's a little more sustained, maybe.
Yeah.
Like I worked on a movie, Whisperer in Darkness, which just came out for iTunes this week.
Yeah, and we'll put a
And
link so you
they,
can rent it
yeah.
and see John's handiwork.
There you go. I was line producer and I'm not at all involved in distribution, and it was several years ago, but they did a great job, and they're still getting it out there. And the point is that it's like a 1930s or early 40s horror film, like Dracula. So it's shot in that style and everything. and it's got a niche. And they'll go to, sci-fi film festivals or horror film festivals, or it's an H.P. Lovecraft, if people know the author H.P. Lovecraft, who's sort of like a early 20th century precursor to Stephen King, they'll go to H.P. Lovecraft film festivals, and there's your audience. There you are connecting with the people that actually would buy your film. Still this huge set of conventions out there that your audience is going, people that are sort of tuned into your type of product are going to, and over a series of years they can tap into that and generate a lot of revenue that way and get, people who would, I mean, it's not just for them, that like H.P. Lovecraft fans would love to see this film, and this is the way they learn about it.
But
So I hope that in our instance, there's human rights types of festivals or Latin American festivals.
so there's this,
Yeah.
this challenge of, okay, we do the project. It takes a couple of years to get it out there, and then a couple more years before you can just download
Well,
it,
it's
right?
probably just something we should be doing a year and a half from now. It should be part of our due diligence. It should be part of our efforts. It's, and they don't necessarily, if they're in the film festival in Greece, it didn't mean they went to Greece. Although I did see them go to like Ireland and a couple of places, but you might not even go to all these places. But probably, it's over the long term. You're researching these types of things and helping. It's helping you to stay relevant.
Yeah.
But
And
it's not, you could have done 15 things in the interim,
right. So it's, I think at the heart of this episode and this decision is really this idea of trade-offs. You can go down this one path and you have the potential to get picked up and have your audience greatly expanded and, your next project funded and all these great things. But on the other hand, then you're sort of sacrificing this immediate connection with the audience. And I think that we have, throughout our discussions, we've leaned more towards the idea of making an impact with the film. Like, we want this to be out and to make a difference. And
I think, like, in our ideal world, and this is, this not probably not going to happen, but and I hesitate to mention this film because I think that it was so problematic. So I'm just talking about the distribution of this film. I'm not talking about the film. But in our ideal world, we'd do something like they did with that Coney film, where like maybe we'd release it in segments on YouTube for free. And the because the point is to have as many eyeballs as possible, and for people to know that there's still families looking for 500 disappeared children that disappeared in the early 80s in El Salvador, and that some of them are still out there, and that could, if there was more awareness of this issue, there would be more reunions, and the reunions are still happening, and so that's the goal. The goal isn't to make $1 million. The goal is to create awareness for the issue, hopefully make some type of impact, and get to continue to finish telling this story, which takes dollars, right?
yeah.
So
Which is a challenge in itself, right? So
yeah, that's like, so you
that's
can't just say, oh, we're going to put it out there for free and everybody watch. Like, we've got to figure something out, and we
right.
will. But
Yeah, and it's a very tough balance to maintain. But
we err on the side of like, we're in the camp of, okay, we're not gonna try and make a splash at Sundance if we were even that, let's say we were so lucky. What we're erring on the side of is that we'd like people to participate and make this an op as open a process as we can.
yeah, I think that says it perfectly. So this leads me to a story that I wanted to share of an example of how I feel that the world is sort of shifting in our favor. I think you go back 10, 15 years ago, then it's very hard to do what we're talking about. You can't just post a video on YouTube and have millions of people see it. That that thing, you know, there was no YouTube, there was no internet, all those pieces were missing. But now we're starting to get to a point where the infrastructure is in place and people are using it. And so it is a lot easier for someone to do an independent piece of work and have it picked up and sort of exposed to a more mainstream audience, let's say. And a great example of this is my friend Srini, who was a speaker at the Misfit conference, which I attended back in June in Fargo. And he just self-published this book, The Art of Being Unmistakable, a collection of essays about making a dent in the universe. And he sent me a review copy and I gave him some feedback early on. But this was out, and his sort of goal for the project was to sell around 1,000 copies, you know, because he's an independent author and he didn't go through a publisher. He just picked himself and put it out there. And what was
So
fascinating.
his distribution was like some like Amazon or something, where Amazon gets 30% and he gets 60 or 70%, and if he sells 1,000 copies for $10, he's gonna get $6,000 or $7,000. Is that the
Well, I mean, he was only selling it for $3. So, but
okay.
yes, it's, you know, Amazon gets a cut and then he gets the rest. And I think it wasn't even about the money as much as getting his message out there and saying, you know, like, as an author, here, I'm going to put this out into the world and my goal is to sell 1,000
I want to be
copies.
heard.
Right. Yes, I want to
Okay.
spread this message. So he put it out there, and you know, the other half of the distribution is people like me, right? So it comes out and I post about it on Facebook, and you know, he has this blog that he's run and done. He's done a lot of interviews, and all of his fans and listeners posted about it. And the book went to number two on Amazon in the business section, I believe, you know, when it
Really?
came out. Yeah. And it just so happened to catch the attention of one Glenn Beck. Yeah, and which sort of blew my mind because, I just didn't, I was sort of like, why is Glenn Beck picking up on this? You know, it just seems so different. And
Is the book ideological?
no, it's not. I mean, Srini is, and he's talked about this before, he is not sort of
Srini's
either.
not a Glenn Beck listener per se.
Right, exactly. And he
Okay.
does not take a stance on either side of the aisle. And this is something he wrote
But
about
it's
after the.
about entrepreneurial spirit, and
Right.
Glenn Beck liked that, I guess.
Yeah, I think he really
You're also
connected to
just
it.
telling this to me, so I don't know the story.
Right. Well, what's crazy about this is not only did it, like, he just, I guess, decided to buy it on a whim and he read it, but he absolutely loved it. But he invited Srini to come on his show. So he does like this independent radio or whatever he has,
He's
and
got a internet channel that you pay a
yeah, he
subscription
so
to.
he has his own distribution, and now Glenn
Yeah.
Beck, as Srini puts it, has a bigger microphone than most of us, you know, and he can reach 30 million people or so. But he invited Srini on to talk about the book. And what was fascinating to me was watching this interview, and I'll post a link to that interview. But I really got to see a different side of Glenn Beck. You know, we have this sort of idea of who he is in the media,
I'm
and
going to refrain comment for the
yeah,
sake of your friend
I mean, see,
Srini.
exactly. We have this
I would not be a Glenn Beck listener.
right.
I do not have a positive opinion of Glenn Beck. But that
Have
doesn't mean he couldn't do a good, it doesn't mean that he doesn't see something in this book that's worth discussing, he probably
Right.
does.
And that's what I found fascinating was that, you know, I did have a certain opinion about Glenn Beck, and then watching him interview Srini and how deeply they connected, you really got to see sort of a different side. And he, you know, I'm just going to say it sort of opened my eyes a little bit about the biases that we all have. And it was interesting. But I think the larger point in this story is simply that my friend Srini, he put out his book. You know, he didn't go through a traditional publisher, and someone with a bigger microphone, a megaphone.
Did he hit number two on business after Glenn Beck or before Glenn
No,
Beck?
before.
Before?
Yep. So
Wow.
he hit number
Okay.
two on Amazon before Glenn Beck
And
found
then he
him,
hit number one, right?
and then Glenn Beck recommended him, And he sold over 1,000 copies. And one thing he said, in his updates while this was happening is
He's
like,
probably sold way over 1,000 copies,
yeah.
right?
So now I think it's up to 2 or maybe 3,000
Oh,
now.
really?
Yeah. So, he said, never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that Glenn Beck would be the person to push me over my 1,000 copy goal.
Yeah.
Right. So, the larger point is I think we're living in a world where sort of the independent folks out there can put stuff into the world, and
He didn't know
it,
who his audience was going to be. Is that sort of.
well, kind of in a way. I mean, he knew that it would be us, and I would post about it. He knew that much, but he didn't realize it would have this appeal to larger influencers. And I think that that's the world we're living in right now, where not necessarily a Glenn Beck, but any sort of person who has their a louder megaphone and can reach a larger audience can find, may find you and promote you. And that's kind of, it is a roll of the die, and there's nothing to say that that's going to happen to us, but there's always that possibility. And I think that that's the direction, as you say, that we lean a little bit more. All right. Well, I think
You
that's a
did
good.
surprise. You said before you're going to surprise me and not tell me who, and you did surprise
Yeah. I knew you'd like that.
me.
Anyway, I think that's where we're going to end it for today. John, do you have anything else?
I think that's great. No offense to all the Glenn Beck fans out there. I'm sure you think I'm an idiot.
All right. Well, you can tune in next week, and
And
thanks for being
congratulations,
here. Yeah.
Sreeni.
Thanks for being here with us.
Bye.